Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Sunscreen helps to prevent cancer. I don't know if you knew that or not, but it does. And anyone can get cancer if you are exposed to the sun for too much and don't have protection. We're going to be talking about using sunscreen correctly today with our guest, Dr. Apple Bodemer. She's a dermatologist, associate professor in the Department of Dermatology at UW-Madison, directs the Integrative Dermatology Clinic. It focuses on offering this healthcare approach for dermatologic conditions. So great to have her with us today. Dr. Apple Bodemer, welcome.
Thank you.
So let's cover the basic. What happens to our skin when we get too much sun exposure?
So sunlight actually is UV radiation, and then the UVA and the UVB ranges are the most damaging for us, and that's the ones that we're most concerned about. When we get too much, that penetrates the skin and can actually cause mutations in the nuclei of the cells that make up the skin. And when that happens, when you get enough mutations, those skin cells will start to turn over too quickly, meaning they start to replicate too fast, and then you get them kind of building up, and these mutations kind of grow and grow just like cancer does in other organs.
Mm. So not a good thing. What about vitamin D, on the other hand? You know, you're supposed mm-hmm. to get exposure to the sun for that.
Yeah, and that picture isn't completely clear. It actually doesn't take a lot of sun exposure to get an adequate amount of vitamin D produced in the skin. It also appears that there are some people that just don't make vitamin D very efficiently. And I can tell you, I see lots and lots of farmers who have spent their whole lives out in the sun, and they come in to me with multiple skin cancers, and their vitamin D levels are really, really low. So it's something that is definitely worth thinking about, just getting checked at some point and seeing where you sit with your vitamin D level, and then thinking about supplementation. It's cheap, it's easy, it's really safe. You don't want to get too much vitamin D, but it's good to kind of know your level and supplement appropriately.
So lots of options out there for sunscreens.
Mm-hmm.
How do you decide the best one?
The best one. Well, I generally guide people towards the physical blockers, and those include titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. They basically act like a force shield. So you put it on your skin and it deflects the UV radiation rays. Whereas the chemical blockers are probably more common in most sunscreen products. And what they tend to do is they absorb the energy from the UV radiation and convert it to heat. And some people who are sensitive might pick up on this, that when they go outside and have sunscreen on, they might sort of feel some heat. Most people are already out and it's kind of hot anyway, so they're not picking up on that. But that's what's actually happening. There is a lot of controversy around some of the chemicals in the as active ingredients in the sunscreens, especially these days. There's been a lot of talk about, is the FDA doing enough to test these chemicals and make sure that they're safe for us? The one that I generally recommend avoiding is oxybenzone. That one it penetrates the skin really, really well. It has a high likelihood of causing allergic reactions or irritant reactions in people who are sensitive, and there is some evidence that it appears to act as a hormone disruptor.
Oh, my goodness. Is it present in a lot of sunscreens?
It is. I don't know the percentage, you know, and as there's been more awareness about this, this is also one of the main ingredients that that can actually damage coral reefs. And so that's what's one of the two ingredients that when we talk about, like, sunscreen being safe for the environment, that's kind of that one, and oxycinnamate, which they are the two that if they're in the sunscreen, it can't be deemed the coral safe.
So this whole business about SPF, you can get 30 or 60, or there's probably higher than that even. I don't know.
I was 100.
It
was up to 100.
So if I do 100, am I better off than if I did 20 or 30?
My general recommendation is anything above 30. I don't have a problem with the higher concentrations. Theoretically, if you have sensitive skin, the higher concentrations of those active chemical ingredients may put you at risk for more absorption and more risk for irritant or allergic reactions. In terms of how much sun protection you get, it's not a huge benefit. Going from 30 to 50 is maybe a couple percentages of extra protection. The tricky thing about those high SPF ratings, so I want to also mention that SPF really only measures how well the sunscreen protects against UVB radiation, and it does not measure at all the UVA radiation protection factor. So we're really looking at how well it prevents burns. I think of UVA as more aging, and they both can cause gene mutations in the nucleus of the skin cells, but UVA is for aging and UVB is for burn. That's kind of something we learned in school. But so when you're looking at that SPF, you really need to see that it says broad spectrum. And when it contains those physical blockers, the zinc oxide or titanium dioxide, that blocks both. And that's another reason why I really lean kind of heavily towards steering people towards those products.
Yeah, and the sprays, of course, when I'm golfing, I like to use the sprays because then I don't get my hand all oily.
Yeah, they're quick and easy, and especially for parents with young kids, it's easier to kind of hit a moving target with the spray. There are some problems with the sprays. One of them is that it's just not good for the environment, a lot of the chemicals in them. And when you spray on the skin, if you're doing it from much distance at all, most of that sunscreen is actually going off into the environment and not getting on your skin. So my recommendation is that they're going to use them. It's a good idea either to spray it in your hand and rub it on or to spray it on your skin and then rub it in, which gets you the greasy or sticky hands that you don't want for golfing.
Oh, and what about reapplying? Now, I was telling my daughter got a little sunburn last week, and she put sunscreen on, but then she said she didn't get around to reapplying, and I'm wondering how often should you be reapplying?
Yeah, and that kind of ties into the previous comment about how the higher SPF ratings. So the SPF tells you how long you can be in the sun before you get burned, but at those levels of 100, it's still going to wear off, and it's still going to rub off. It's still going to sweat off. So in general, people should be reapplying a full amount of sunscreen to their body every 2 hours or after getting wet, like getting in a pool. If you get in a pool for 10 minutes and get out and towel it off, all that sunscreen's on the towel, and it needs to be reapplied. But then also for people who are really active outdoors and sweating, especially for the face, sunscreen is going to sweat right off. So, that is tricky. And I think one of the things that we often get caught up with sunscreen as the first line of defense, and really in my book, it's the last, it's your backup plan. Trying to keep activities to the earlier morning and later evening and avoiding that high intensity UV exposure in the middle of the day is really the first thing. And then seeking shade when you need to be outside, and then the protective clothing. And I think I really rely heavily on the protective clothing just personally, and also recommend that for a lot of my patients because it doesn't rub off. It doesn't wear off. You put it on, you're covered until you take it off. Wide-brimmed hats and sunglasses with really wide lenses also really help protect the facial skin and especially the delicate skin around the eyes. So that's something we should really be thinking about.
Dr. Apple Bodemer, our guest today, dermatologist, associate professor in the Department of Dermatology at UW-Madison. Let's take a call. Jessica in Eau Claire, we'll give you a chance. Hi. Jessica, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. What can we do for you?
I just heard about red light therapy, and they had, I guess it's claimed to help reverse sun damage. Has she heard anything about that?
I'm familiar with red light therapy being used for acne and also for hair rejuvenation. Those are the things that there is some questionable but some positive evidence about. I think for acne, some patients really do benefit from that. In terms of reversing sun damage, that really isn't something that I've seen. You can do like some light treatments, broadband light, or intense pulse light, and that can reverse the visible signs of sun damage, the pigment issues that we get from brown spots that we get blotchy all over our face. But it really, I don't think there's any evidence that it actually reduces risk of skin cancer.
Oh, there we go. Thank you for calling, Jessica. John in Denmark emailed to ask what to do if, let's say you forget to put on the sunscreen and you get a good burn. What post-burn steps should you take to best take care of that?
Well, the number one is get out of the sun and try to protect yourself. Limit your exposure to the sun, especially when the skin is burned, because at that point, it's much more vulnerable to getting burned again or to worsening the effects of the burn. The other thing is really focusing on trying to minimize the inflammation, because when that burn happens, a lot of what we see in the redness and the pain, swelling, some blistering even, comes from the immune response, inflammatory response. And so, you know, if you're somebody that takes ibuprofen, you could take ibuprofen after a bad burn. Turmeric is a really potent anti-inflammatory spice. There are several others out there, so increasing that either in your diet or supplemental form could potentially be helpful. It's really important to moisturize the skin so that it stays well hydrated, and that'll help it repair much better. And
by moisturizing, a lotion of some sort?
Yep, a lotion or cream. You know, people will put aloe on sunburns, and that can be really soothing. You can use oatmeal poultices. You can buy oatmeal packs that Aveeno makes or other brands that make that as well. It's like a powder, and you can mix that. Or you can just take oat flour that you can just grind oats in a blender and apply that to the area. That can be really soothing. Cold packs for some people. You know, if it's blistered and oozing, that's a pretty significant burn, and that would be pretty painful.
Take some more calls. Patty in Stevens Point, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. I just have a question. My daughter, if she uses anything but a sensitive skin sunscreen, which is a, 50 SPF, she breaks out in a terrible rash. What is the ingredient that I should be looking for in any other sunscreen for her to be able to use?
I would really stick with the physical blockers, the zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. Avobenzone and Meroxyl are two chemical blockers that have the lowest allergenicity potential, meaning the lowest chance of causing irritation or allergic reaction. And she could try that. That's kind of it. It could be any of them, and some people will just react to the chemical being on their skin, especially if they have a history of eczema. If you look for formulations that are made for babies, that's going to help, and that's something that I recommend for a lot of my patients who have sensitive skin or who have issues. Those tend to be mineral-based, and so that's what I would recommend. But if she has something she's using that she tolerates, stick with that.
Yeah, for sure. Patty, I hope that helps. Thank you very much for calling. Talking with Dr. Apple Bodemer, dermatologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, talking with Dr. Apple Bodemer today, a dermatologist from UW-Madison, visiting about sunscreens and sunburns. Let's take a call from Mary in Oregon next. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a question about my daughter uses on the children like a powder-based, it's probably a facial makeup with SPF in it. But I think, people have gotten so worried about all the chemicals in the sunblocks that I'm concerned that she's not using real sunblock on the children. Now, I haven't seen them get, burned or anything, but that does not seem to be a very effective sunblock to me. I'm just wondering if you could address that.
Yeah, you'd have to really look and see what the ingredients are. Usually the powders are mineral-based, and there are some good ones out there, but like everything, they're only as good as the person putting them on. So you really need to look at what is the SPF, and then making sure that they're getting it evenly across. If they're using it on their whole body, usually those are facial products meant for women that do kind of cover up for makeup, It really has to do with making sure you're getting enough on and that you're reapplying it. And that is a little bit harder to do with the powders, but you know, looking at the ingredient list, I'm not sure which product she's using. So there are good ones out there.
And are there some that you like better than others? You
can the powders. I don't usually recommend those because it's a bit harder to
get the application
applied right. There are Physicians Formula actually makes a powder based mineral based. Cover up that has SPF in it. And I think that's a good one that always comes up pretty highly rated by the Environmental Working Group. So that is an option. There are some that come in like a tube and the brush is on the end and you sort of just brush it on the skin.
Mm.
So
there you go. Mary, thank you very much for calling. Did that help, by the way?
Yes, it did. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Michael in Iowa County, we'll go to you now. Hi, Michael.
Yes, back in the 60s as a teenager, I had severe acne, and it was treated by a dermatologist with like ultraviolet light of some sort. Mm-hmm. Would that have anything to do with my ongoing skin cancer problems?
Yeah, it definitely could be contributing. That's something that we used to think was a good idea. We actually sometimes used radiation X-ray treatments to treat both acne and ringworm of the scalp, and that potentially could increase your risk of skin cancer depending on the type. We used to use a broad UVA band to do phototherapy, which can treat a variety of other conditions as well. And now we have limited that to something that's much more safer and doesn't increase the skin cancer risk as much. But with acne, the sunlight actually will improve acne. It improves several other inflammatory conditions as well, like eczema.
You mean it helps eliminate?
Yeah.
Not makes it more.
No, it makes it better. It improves it. And one of the reasons is because UV radiation suppresses the immune system to some degree. So it has the anti-inflammatory property by kind of dampening the immune reaction to whatever stimulus is causing the inflammation. So that's kind of a tricky thing when you get to people with eczema or psoriasis or acne. You know that if they go outside in the summer without sunscreen on, that's going to improve their skin condition. But you have to balance that.
Mm. Michael, does that help?
Should I just continue using sunscreen or what do I do?
Well, kind of what I was saying before, is it face that you're having the most problems with?
With what? Face?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I've had it all over backs and arms. And mostly
yeah.
Face.
I mean, we do know that that there's a couple of supplements that we don't have good human studies, but we do have some good studies in cell cultures and some in animal models, especially of green tea. So if you're a coffee drinker or a black tea drinker, switching to green tea, we don't have doses because we don't have really, you know, good solid human studies, but I generally recommend between 2 and 6 cups of green tea a day. You might think about increasing turmeric in your diet. You might think about just eating a lot more fruits and vegetables. We know that people who have been eating lots of fruits and vegetables for a long period of time do have less risk, who have less skin cancer, and when they do get skin cancer, they have less recurrence. And then finally, this actually probably I should have said first, there is a supplement called nicotinamide. It's a form of vitamin B3, and there was a really well-done study that came out of Australia probably about 4 years ago now that looked at people who had 2 or more non-melanoma skin cancers in the 5 years prior to entering the study, and they found a 23% decreased risk of developing new non-melanoma skin cancers when they were taking the nicotinamide. It's a water-soluble B vitamin, so as soon as you stop taking it, that benefit goes away. But that's inexpensive. It can be sometimes hard to find, so you might have to ask your pharmacy. I don't know why, but a lot of my patients come back saying like they had to order it online or they had a hard time finding it. Niacin is different. That's the other form of vitamin B3, and that can cause flushing and has people will take it for cardiovascular reasons. So you want it to be the nicotinamide.
Nicotinamide. Mm-hmm. Okay. There we go, Michael. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Lewis, a call to ask, how soon can you apply sunscreen before you go out? You know.
Well, ideally, you'd put it on about 15 to 20 minutes before you go out, and that allows for the sunscreen to sort of shift into an even layer on your skin. You know, but if you find yourself out and you're putting it on, you know, 5 minutes before, you're not going to have optimal protection that minute you step into the sun. So, you know, as soon as you can, and ideally 15 to 20 minutes before.
And a couple of callers asked if you could repeat the names of the ingredients in sunscreen that you don't want.
We don't want. Yeah, so oxybenzone is the main one that's got the most controversy around it.
Oxybenzone?
Oxybenzone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Octinoxate is the next one.
What's that again?
Octinoxate.
Octinoxate.
It's like alphabet soup when you come to these words. They're really hard to pronounce. And then there's a list where those are the two that have the highest concerns of toxicity. Those are the two that have to be, that cannot be present in order for sunscreen to be considered reef safe because of the damage that they do to the environment. And then homosalate, octosalate, octotriline, those are other ones that...
Is there a list of, can we go online and find a list of those?
Yeah, so the Environmental Working Group, I think they do a really good job of looking at some of the controversies around sunscreen. You can get sound bites that can be confusing if you just are scanning it, but if you really read what they're writing, it's pretty good information. They also come out with the sunscreen guide every May. I believe it is out. I haven't had a chance to peruse it myself yet, but and that goes through a lot of different products that are on the market. It rates them according to their risk for potential cancer risk, allergenicity, and then and hormone disruption. And so you can kind of look and see.
So just go online too and just type in the environmental group?
If you put up environmental working group or
environmental working group.
EWG.org. Mm-hmm.
EWG.org.
Yeah.
That's a lot easier to remember than the other ones. the ones where you're gonna find when you go there. All right, Carrie in Wausau, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. I got a question for you. My wife and I have noticed here in the last 2-3 months, but my bottom of my calves in front are getting really brownish, like freckles. Like, is that like a skin cancer or?
Nope, that's sun damage. And having a lot of freckles does increase your risk. It tells us you've had a lot of UV radiation exposure, and the more UV radiation exposure you have, the higher your risk of skin cancer. So lots of freckles is, you're probably somewhat fair skinned, is my guess, and that can lead to freckling, which is sort of not necessarily even a precursor, but a marker.
A marker.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go, Carrie. Thank you. We have Richard in Madison next. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for my call. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about how to keep your eyes from burning severely when you use sunscreen. And I try and wash the palms of my hands after I use it, and I'm using one of the sun blockers rather than the chemical ones. But boy, if I, if I rub my eyes or touch them, it's really almost intolerable.
Yeah. Well, I would say your best bet, wide-rim sunglasses and a broad-brimmed hat. Mm-hmm. Using the protective gear. It's tough. I mean, you can wash your hands after and then completely, and I'm guessing that you're getting some irritation from one of the inactive ingredients in the sunscreen you're using, so you might want to think of using one that's formulated either for babies or for someone with sensitive skin and see if that makes a difference.
Yeah, that's what I'm using.
Okay, you're using that and it's still causing that irritation. Yeah, then I would say if I were you, I would really focus on, you're still going to get reflection, so when we wear hats and sunglasses, you still make it reflection, especially if you're on water or sand. And, we think about UV protection mostly in the summertime, but in the winter, ice and snow can really reflect a lot of UV radiation as well. So if you're wearing a hat, you're not going to be getting protection from that bounce back radiation, but it's going to cut down significantly on the amount of exposure you're getting.
Daughter Carol Lee sent me from Arizona a wide-brimmed hat all the way around, mm-hmm. and they sell them in Arizona, I guess, a lot, because they have it looks almost like aluminum foil on the top to sort of reflect the heat away from you.
Yeah.
It does a pretty good job, actually. Mm-hmm. Richard, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. Apple Bodemer, our guest today, associate professor in the Department of Dermatology at the UW-Madison. Let's talk about sort of recognizing cancer, skin cancers. Can you talk about what to be looking for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the most common type of skin cancer people get is basal cell cancer. And that can show up as a shiny red bump that will start to ooze and usually bleed. So bleeding is a big clue, something that's bleeding without you manipulating it. They can sometimes be painful, sometimes not. With squamous cell cancer, which is the second most common type of skin cancer we see pretty much, I see it every day, they tend to be more scaly red patches that can get thick. They have a precursor lesion called an actinic keratosis, and those are really thin, kind of scaly patches that might feel like if you touch it, it feels a little bit like sandpaper. It'll catch your finger. Mm-hmm. And in the early stages, those will come and go, and then they come and stay. And it's thought that a relatively small percentage actually go on to become cancer. But if you have these scaly red spots and if they get tender or start bleeding without you manipulating them, then you know those are clues to call and get seen. And then certainly we worry about melanoma, and that's the most deadly form of skin cancer. A person
dies.
How
does it present?
Yeah, as a newer changing dark spot. So, you know, and that's tricky because we all have dark spots. And as we get older, our bodies make a lot of different types of very normal, benign dark spots. So what I really recommend for everybody starting as early as you can is to do a monthly skin self-check. And that just means spending 5 minutes looking at your skin using a wall mirror and a hand mirror to see some of the hard to see spots. Or if you have a partner that's with you regularly and is willing to look at your skin, that can be really helpful. But you want to be comfortable with the kinds of spots your body makes. And the more you do it, the better you're going to get at picking up on something that's going to be kind of out of character for the rest of your spot. So that's one big thing I look for, something that just stands out as being different from everything else you have. And the only way you're going to be able to know that is if you are doing that regularly. So,
yeah, there we go. Richard in Hayward has something for us. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I'm 60 years old, and I, about 55 years of age, I had a heart attack. So I've been on heart meds, lisinopril and metoprolol. I believe one is a Plavix. Of course, those are probably generic names. But since then, and the side effects, if you read it, I have on the left side of my face, on my cheek, my right side is fine, but my left side is very susceptible to the sun, and it'll rash. And I can somewhat manage it with put a lot of sunscreen on it, Neutrogena, like 110 SPF type thing. But every now and then it breaks up pretty bad, especially this time of the year. And I'm wondering about late effects of cancer, if this is going to be a problem. And even if I do get off the drugs, I don't know if I will, is the cancer going to be a problem?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I don't have a great answer for that one because it depends. The reaction that people have sometimes is more of a photoallergic reaction, and that really doesn't indicate that you're going to have increased risk of skin cancer. I'm wondering if you drive a lot.
Do you drive a lot?
Are you the main driver in your family? Okay, because having it just be on the left side, it's common for people. So you window glass, including auto window glass, will block UVB radiation, but it does not block UVA radiation. And so that's something that I'll see. You can see usually people will have kind of half of their face is aged a little faster if you're looking for that, or they'll have more skin cancers on one side, especially an arm if people are either driving or passenger. You know, so I'm not sure why it's only affecting one side, why you're only getting that rash there. If you are getting burned more easily, so some of the medications can cause easier burning, then that will increase your risk for skin cancer, and you really want to minimize that experience of getting a sunburn. So
there you go. Richard, good luck. Thank you. Steve in Milwaukee will give you a chance. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I just thought I'd let the listeners and the guests know that I was involved in a clinical study that was sponsored by the FDA that was testing the residual effect of how long the sunscreen chemicals were in a person's system, how long it would last.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
And I was a second cohort, and after the first cohort, they were shocked to find that how long these chemicals, and I'm not sure which chemicals they were studying, and I'm not sure exactly what sunscreen, because it was a double blind study and so forth. But they were quite shocked to find that these chemicals were in the system for so long in your blood.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fair-skinned, and so I've been putting on sunscreen most of my life, and now I'm kind of cautious.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm definitely going to look for the ones with the titanium. You said titanium dioxide and zinc oxide?
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing is that those protective clothing, you know, and that it comes back to sunscreen should be our backup plan. It shouldn't be our first line of defense for UV protection. It's kind of, you know, so those protective clothing, there's several companies out there. They've become more affordable and more widely available. And, you know, I have an overshirt, oversized shirt that I'll throw on if I'm going to be out and about. There's a company that makes a really nice glove. I'm not sure if I can say the name of it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I can. So it's called Eclipse Sun Glove, and they actually make a sleeve that goes kind of covers your hand if you want it to. You can roll the glove part up, and then it'll go up to your shoulder. And that's really great for driving because I'll throw that on, and then I'm not worried about what's going on in terms of sun damage with my arms. Or if I'm out with kids, and I can take them on and off really easily, and it doesn't change my whole wardrobe. So I think that that's something that we kind of lose sight of. There are other things that we could be thinking of.
And what's it? What's it called again?
Eclipse Sun Glove is the company.
Eclipse Sun Glove.
Yeah, and they make just a few products, but they're a really I've tried a lot of them, and these are my favorite. Lightweight. Oh. They come in nice colors, and they're easy to wear.
All right, Steve. Thank you very much for calling. Jane in Menominee will give you a chance now. Hi, Jane.
Hello, how are you folks today?
Good, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, a previous caller called and said he had a lot of freckles on his leg, and you said it was sun exposure. I have quite the opposite. I have very white spots on both legs. I'm wondering what that is. I always kind of thought I maybe took the top layer of skin off when I was shaving my legs as a young girl. So, any ideas?
Yeah, are they raised or are they flat?
They are flat.
They're flat.
Had them for years. Yep.
Yeah, so there's two options. There's one that we call idiopathic guttate hypomelanosis, which basically is a big word that means just you get these random white spots on your skin. And it happens more as people get older. And though, you know, this isn't exactly, we tend to see it more in people who have more sun damage. There are also some skin lesions that are benign, completely normal. Almost everybody has them starting around 30, and how many you get really depends on your genetics, and what color they are also seems to depend on kind of what your family history is. But they can be either raised or even flat. So, and those are really nothing to worry about. Some people get a lot of them, and if they're flat, like I said, they can be white or lighter color than the rest of your skin. So it's one of the two is my guess.
Okay, so it's not anything serious.
No.
Medically or anything.
No. Now, if she's large patches, that would be something called vitiligo, and that's a different autoimmune condition. But it doesn't sound like that from what you're saying, Jane.
That's correct. Yeah. And I was pretty much a sun goddess in the day, not anymore. So
yeah.
I can understand that. So, yes, thank you so much.
All right, Jane, thanks a lot for calling. Kathleen called in to say she uses Vaseline around her eyes to stop sunscreen or bug repellent from dripping into her eyes.
Yeah.
Why not? You direct the Integrative Dermatology Clinic. What does all that mean?
So I, after I did my residency in general dermatology, I did a fellowship in integrative medicine as well, and I've been pretty active in that area, both teaching integrative medicine fellows how that approach to healthcare applies to dermatology and skin issues. But really, it's looking at a wide variety of healing options and looking at it through a Western lens. So I'm not an acupuncturist, and I'm never going to perform that, but I know when that's appropriate and what kinds of patients to send there. I have done I've got a lot of interest in diet and nutrition in particular, but also how lifestyle impacts chronic skin disease. And that's really my passion. And when patients come to me, some of them have an interest in that and my expertise in that area, and others are looking for more general traditional approaches, and I kind of do both. But you'll often hear me asking about your diet when you first come. That's usually the first thing we start talking about.
And what are the most common skin problems you deal with?
Skin cancer is definitely probably at the top of the list. I see a lot of rashes. I see a lot of acne, some warts. Actually, I see a lot of hair loss. That's probably, now that we have physician assistants and nurse practitioners that are dealing with a lot of acne and wart, kind of the bread and butter sort of stuff that comes in every day, it allows me to see more complex things, autoimmune disease, a lot of psoriasis, eczema, hair loss.
And go back to that website we can go to see the ingredients that we don't want and maybe the ones we do want.
Yeah, the Environmental Working Group, so EWG.org.
Well, it's Apple, it's always great fun to have you with us. Thank you so much for taking time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I appreciate it very much. She'll be back. We'll talk with her again. Dr. Apple Bodemer, dermatologist, associate professor in the Department of Dermatology at UW-Madison. And as I said, she directs an integrative dermatology clinic focusing on offering this healthcare approach for dermatologic conditions. So it's great to have her with us, and we'll, I'm sure, have her back again. And now here's one of our favorite Wisconsin Life pieces from last year.
Wisconsin is far from flat. Just ask anyone who bikes. Steve Gotcher tells us about one notorious stretch of road near Trempealeau in southwest Wisconsin.
The morning was already hot and humid as my friend Steve and I pedaled out of Perot State Park. The mercury had already passed 80, on its way into the 90s. But my thoughts were focused on one thing. What do they mean by Hip Breaker Hill? On my biking cue sheet, it's singled out with an exclamation point. When a hill is named, that usually means it's long and it's steep. The area east of the Mississippi River near Trempealeau is filled with long, winding valleys, connected by short, steep passes. Narrow paved roads hug the valley edge and then snake along through the hills to the next valley. We roll by chicken farms with long, low, windowless coops. In between, fields of corn and soybeans dot the landscape. Our path takes us into the village of Dodge, past some sheds, a church, and a couple of taverns. Before we can blink, we're headed out of town on the smooth rolling asphalt of County G. Turning off G and onto Pine Creek Ridge Road, we spin ever closer to Hip Breaker. A passing pedestrian looks at me and nods. Or was that a smirk and a shake of his head? As I contemplate this, a couple on a motorcycle roll by in the opposite direction. I can't quite hear as I spin past, but I would swear the driver and passenger are laughing at those crazy guys trying to bicycle to the top of that hill. With these thoughts swirling, I roll along the valley floor to the foot of Hip Breaker. As usual, my friend surges past me and disappears. The road curves slightly and gently slopes upward into the woods that form a natural canopy overhead. I look down. Spray painted on the road is 12%. Is that the pitch of the hill or the percentage of it I'd ridden? The road levels, and I look down on the roof of the barn I'd just passed. So far, this climb isn't so bad. Then another number, 16%. The trees seem to lean in closer, and the odd pine branches hang like jagged teeth over my head as I shift to the lowest gear. The road disappears into the trees. I creep slowly, knowing that 16% is indeed the pitch. The breeze dies, and the stillness causes the temperature to soar, making breathing nearly impossible. Don't stop, don't stop, pounds in my head as I start to switch back across the width of the road. Another corner, and the hill only ascends further into the trees. I stop. Gasping for breath, I know I need to regroup, but clipping into my pedals again without falling over on a 16% grade isn't easy. I manage to clip in and slowly zigzag up and up. The hill feels endless. Finally, I see the growing horizon. In a few minutes, I'd be there. But that short distance might as well have been the width of the Grand Canyon. As I approach the crest, two guys with red faces wearing camouflage hats on ATVs shout over the roar of the engines, "You could have used one of these." "That wouldn't have been as much fun," I gasp. At the top, I savor my conquest. My lungs burn and my legs ache, but my hips are fine. Maybe they should have named that hill Lung Scorcher instead. The next 6 miles gently slope along, back to the flats leading to Trempealeau, where a cold pint of microbrew awaits my full attention.
Steve Gotcher is a technical director and producer at Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every single Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. And find out more about Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.